When Pauline Chen began medical school, she dreamed of saving lives. Like every young doctor in training, she soon discovered that a doctor's life is also full of death. But dealing with death, knowing when to let a patient die and how to comfort their families, wasn't part of the medical school curriculum. Today, Pauline Chen is a transplant surgeon and a gifted writer. In her book, Final Exam, A Surgeon's Reflections on Mortality, she writes that it is surprising how unprepared doctors are to deal with death, considering how much of it they see.
Physicians in training see, on average, 28 deaths a year, which is about a death every 2 weeks, which is quite a bit. You know, when you multiply that by the number of years for residency, anywhere from 3 years to, for me, it was 9 years of training, death becomes pretty common. But, you know, for physicians, it's interesting because, you know, we want to help people. But the problem, I think, for all of us is that we believe from the beginning that helping means curing. And we don't realize that in our professional lives, death, as much as life, will be a part of our lives.
I should probably tell you that a couple of 3 years ago when my mother died. And I tell you this because it colors the way I think about this. It colors the kind of questions that I would ask, I suppose. She was in the ICU. She was on a ventilator. She was in a coma. I spent a week with one doctor who essentially prepared me for the fact that she was unlikely to come out of that coma and that she would die. And I helped my father, who has dementia, to come see her. And then they shifted. They switched doctors, which, of course, you have to do because you can't, as a physician, be there all the time. And the first doctor, who had been so helpful, left, and the second doctor wanted to start all over again and wanted to help, wanted to find ways that might conceivably bring her back. What it did for me and for my sister eventually was to make it more difficult. And it struck me then that in spite of their familiarity with this, they didn't know how to help a family go through this.
Right. We don't get much training with it, with end-of-life care. And predicting death right now has become more and more difficult as our medical technology has sort of exploded, blossomed in the last decade. And because many of us don't have end-of-life care training or experience, especially the older doctors among us, older meaning people of my generation, I finished medical school in 1991, I think that you get situations like this where there are different messages relayed to families.
Well, it's interesting to look at the training because you talk quite explicitly about the training that you got, the good as well as training that you wish you'd had. It's startling for an outsider to realize how early a medical student is introduced to death, the fact of death. You write about the first cadaver that you had to deal with. And it's hard for me to imagine what that must be like.
It was hard for me to imagine, too, actually. I walked into the laboratory rooms, and on these tables, they were metal tables that slid out, they looked like coroner's tables, were white body bags. And you knew what was in them just by the shape of them. Some were bigger, some were smaller. And I remember unzipping the body bag that was mine and my lab partner's. And the medical school put the bodies face down as a way to sort of protect the students emotionally from the experience, you know, sort of gently ease us in.
So the first thing you see wouldn't be the face.
Right. But the first thing I saw were the hands. And I don't think I'll ever forget her hands. I had a female cadaver, and she had beautifully manicured nails, and each nail was painted with coral-colored fingernail polish, and above each cuticle was a little rim of bare nail, as if it was time for another manicure. And on her left ring finger, there was a line, you know, tan line, so you could see where her wedding band had been. You saw where her watch was. And I remember thinking when I saw those hands, this is a person who is not that different from me, who just, you know, however long ago, was walking on the street, I could have passed by her, who had a whole life. And as we dissected the rest of her body, we discovered that life. You know, I discovered that she died of ovarian cancer, which was, you know, at that time, we had been in her body for, I think, about 2 months. And I grieved for her. I suddenly knew what her last days were like, what her last months were like. It was really moving to me. I've never forgotten this woman.
It's an extraordinary story, but it leads me to wonder then what happened next, because as you describe it, this is a moment when death was very real to you. The connection between life and death was very real. And it is though somehow medical training forced that connection apart for the next several years.
One of the things that we had learned was when patients die in the ICU, and I suspect you might have seen this in your own experience, that we believed that we should leave the family alone with the patients in the last moments because, and we convinced ourselves of this, that the patients' families wanted their privacy. So every time a patient of mine died, I left the room and I tried to make myself scarce until the patient had actually died, the family had come out, and I went about my job officially declaring the patient dead and telling the family what to do next. But one patient changed that, and this patient was a middle-aged businessman who had colon cancer that had spread to his lungs and his liver. And he was on the regular surgical floors at first, and I remember rounding on him a couple of times a day, and his wife always stopping me and pulling me outside of the room and saying, "Dr. Chen, when can we bring my husband home?" Because she knew, and he knew, that he didn't have long. And I would say to them, "Well, we're working on it. We're trying to."
There's a little bit more we can do.
Exactly. There's a little bit more that we can do. And unfortunately, he only got worse. We transferred this gentleman to the ICU, and I was on call one night, and it was about 3 or 4 in the morning, and I realized that he probably didn't have much time. So I called the attending surgeon, and I called the patient's wife, and they both came in, and the wife was in tears, obviously. And so I started to do what I always did, which was I would bring the attending surgeon and the patient's family, his wife, to the patient's room, and then I'd turn around and leave. So I turned around and left, and I fully expected the attending surgeon to come out with me and to leave this wife in there alone. But he didn't. And I stood outside of the room. I stood outside there for a few minutes wondering, okay, he's going to come out and I'll just wait. But he never came out. And so I finally looked into the room, and what I saw there, I'll never forget it. It changed my view of my work. I saw him pointing to the monitors and explaining to the patient's wife that this was how the final heart rhythms of life looked like. I saw him pointing to the patient's chest and explaining that at the end of life, a person's breathing changes and not to be alarmed. And I saw him touching the patient's arm and saying to the wife that her presence there in that room, even though her husband appeared not to be aware of it, gave her husband great comfort. And I can still see it, and I'll never forget it, because that moment I realized that as a doctor, as a surgeon, I could do more than just cure.
It's a lovely story.
But it is, and there's a real lesson for a lot of us, yeah, in there.
I wonder if there isn't a lesson of humanity in here somewhere too, because so many of us refuse to face the prospect of our own deaths. I wonder if doctors in general might benefit from facing that. I think you did. You talk about your 83rd liver transplant.
Yes.
Does it help? I mean, maybe you should explain what that's about.
In my transplantation fellowship, after I'd finished my general surgery training, one of my jobs was to procure organs from patients who had been declared brain dead and whose families had decided to donate their organs. And I had done many of them. And after a while, the operation, like all operations, becomes somewhat routine. But you face death over and over and over again in these rooms. And in some ways, I became hardened to it. And I never thought of my own mortality until the 83rd procurement. And this patient, who was brain dead, was an Asian woman, Asian American woman, who was about my age. And I remember as I went to operate on her, we had to drape the operative sterile drapes over her body, sort of being struck by the fact that here was a woman that was about my age who looked somewhat similar to me. But then I sort of pushed that out of my mind and went to my job and laid the drapes down and covered her body completely except for a line that went from the base of her neck down to her pubic bone. So there was a little strip of flesh. And I started the operation with the other surgeon. And I started working on the chest, and he started working on the abdomen. And as I cut into her chest, the drape fell. And what I saw was her breast and the way her chest was formed. I saw the undulations of the ribs, the fall of her breast. And what I saw that night, and it was the middle of the night, it was just as if I had stepped out of the shower and looked at a mirror and saw myself. And it stopped me. It took me a while to sort of regain my composure, and I tried to continue the operation, and the drape fell again. And I struggled with this through the operation, and I remember leaving that operation at the end after we had taken her organs to give to someone else. I remember leaving that night feeling this profound exhaustion for one, but grief. And I couldn't really figure it out. Why did I feel so sad until I started writing about it and thinking about it and realizing that what I had witnessed, in fact, was what I had come face to face with was my own mortality, my own sense that, you know, this could have been me.
Pauline Chen is a transplant surgeon and a writer. Her book is called Final Exam: A Surgeon's Reflections on Mortality.